This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. The movie Black Panther opens at the end of this week. You probably have seen the action-packed trailer and the photos of the majority African-American cast dressed in warrior gear.
The world is changing. Soon, there will only be the conquered and the conquerors.
Step into the spotlight.
You are a good man.
Step into the spotlight.
With a good heart. And it's hard for a good man to be a king.
There's a clip from the trailer of Black Panther, just one of many Marvel superhero movies to hit the box office. But Black Panther appears to be a bit of a phenomenon. Months before its release, Black Panther was among the top 10 most tweeted movies of 2017. And when pre-sale tickets were made available, the movie broke several records, including highest pre-sale tickets for any superhero movie. Joining us to talk about the buzz and the comic book that inspired it all is Bill Young. Bill is the owner of Arkham Comics. It's a comic book store that has locations in Rocky Mount and Wilson. He's going to host a premiere of Black Panther in Wilson tomorrow night and joins us now. Bill, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's good to have you here. Also, super fan and cosplayer Victor Law. Hello, Victor.
Good afternoon, Frank. You honor me with your presence.
I should tell you that Victor is in full costume, and we're going to talk about that. We had we gave the handshake on the way in, or you wouldn't have done the interview, which I appreciate. Bill, tell us about Black Panther, because you host these events now and premieres and that sort of thing, because you have a comic book store, and so you've linked up with studios in the past to do premieres and other promotions, right?
Sure. Mm-hmm. The great thing is DC and Marvel, of course, the big two producers of movies mm-hmm. now, they're very supportive of the movies and the comic book stores and making sure we get promotional material and things like that to take to the movies to, you know, basically educate people about the characters and the books themselves and get them to come into the stores. And we bring friends like Victor with us to, you know, take pictures of the kids and just have an overall very good experience.
So. We don't have to do much to generate interest in some of these films. Is Black Panther different? You've been doing this for a while.
You know... Every time a Marvel movie comes out, I think the hype is a little bit different, depending upon what's going to happen in it. But Black Panther is definitely, you know, getting a lot of traction and a lot of talk at the store and around. You know, it's a big topic right now, and everybody's excited. So,
among them is Victor here, who has had to take off his helmet so we can hear you. But thank you so much. Tell us about your interest in this. How far back does it go?
It goes back to probably the middle 70s when I first saw my first Black Panther comic book, and just watching how he interacted with other groups like the Avengers and other Marvel groups that he was affiliated with, and how he's evolved since the 70s into the multi-million dollar character he is now. The good thing about his backstory is it's so unlike what has come before. Yes, there's tragedy in his backstory, but he's multifaceted in that he's not only the king of an African nation, he's also an Avenger. He's also a superhero. He's also a politician. He's also a brother. He's also in love with Storm, which is another character within the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, and this backstory goes back to the 1960s when he was created, right?
That's correct.
So here you have, in the 1960s, at the end of the 1960s, Stan Lee creating a character with an African backstory, coming from an African country, with a rare mineral that ends up in all places, Captain America's shield, right?
Yes.
So tell us about the importance of this and the fact that there is this strategic mineral in an African country being exploited for, of all people, Captain America, to keep him strong. Pretty incredible story in the 1960s.
Very.
How much of this were you aware of? I mean, because this is what I just told is a deeply political story. You can see the analogy right away.
Yes.
Was this something you were aware of as a young comic book fan in the 1970s?
No. I was too young for that. I was just mainly interested in the fact that there was a black superhero who was not a sidekick, who was starring in his own solo series. The first story that I read was when he took on the Fantastic Four in one by himself. And I was like, wow, that's never been done before. And how he legitimized himself not only as the king of his country, but also as a costume adventurer or superhero in his own right.
Tell us more about, were you a superhero fan generally?
Yes.
Yeah. But then along comes Black Panther. And I got to know about the costume because I know you've invested quite a bit in this. So tell us more about what you have on and tell us about the investment.
Okay. I'm wearing about $1,300 worth of costume. I'm wearing a 3D printed mask that comes in three different pieces that is magnetically attached from the front and also from the rear. If I can just get it apart there. Okay. I had to modify it because as a cosplayer, I'd rather not suffer anymore for my craft than I have to. Some of the modifications I've had to make, you'll see there's padding in the back, so it's a better fit up on my particular head. I've also had to take a die grinder to the front to put some vents in it because one of the things I noticed while wearing it, the longer I wear it, my breath has nowhere to go, so it fogs up my lenses and I can't see, and that's not good.
The downside of being a
superhero. Yeah. You know, good for Matt Murdock, who's Daredevil and blind, very bad for the King of the King of Wakanda. The sash I bought from a fabric store and just had my wife stitch it together and put a little cinch on it. The suit I purchased from a cosplay costume maker in Thailand. I have two suits. This is my lightweight suit. I have a heavier weight suit also. So I kind of got a summer weight and a winter weight. Set of knee pads underneath, set of boots, set of 3D printed gloves.
Did you design the helmet and the gloves, for instance? You talk about 3D printer. Did you design them?
I did not design. Right. I just went on the internet. I want a Black Panther mask. Show me what you got. And just search for what I really wanted my look to be. Found this and voila.
What does it mean to you and what is it like to you? Because I'm imagining, you know, you run into kids all the time. You're interacting a lot. You're at events like Bill is going to hold. And you're interacting with people. I just wonder what it's like for you. Do you have other costumes and do you do other characters as well?
The only other character that I cosplay as was Blade, the Vampire Hunter. I did him from 2004 till last year. I just retired that character because, A, the character was becoming irrelevant. He hasn't done anything noteworthy in the comics nor the film. Plus, comic book conventions have stepped up their weapons policy, and in this case, this character, the weapons makes the man. So retired that character. Mm-hmm. 2 years ago when Captain America Part 3 Civil War came out and they featured the Black Panther, I was like, well, if I'm going to make a switch, which character would I choose? I chose Black Panther. I dressed up for him as him for Halloween. Went out with my granddaughter 2 years ago, and she just thought it was a bomb diggity. And all I had back then was a Walmart mask, a pair of rubber gloves, a t-shirt, and that was it. And that was all I needed for her world. And since then, I've since upgraded to what you see in front of you now. The two times I've worn this costume, the first was at Baltimore Comic Con. The response was positive. Second time was that Bill had an event at his store in Rocky Mount, Halloween Fest. Both times the response was positive. The one thing I have noticed, now that I've chosen a character that's more popular and now that his gear is more available to be purchased and worn by others, I'm starting to see Joan Rivers had a show called Fashion Police, and when two women show up at a party wearing the same dress, now I'm starting to see that envy now.
You get a little rare.
Just a little catty, because I was at the Baltimore Comic Book Convention, and there were two other folks dressed up as Black Panther. The first thing I was doing, that guy's wearing my outfit. What kind of mask is he rocking? Where'd he get that scar from?
Man, when Black Panther gets catty, that could be messy. Yeah. If you think that one through. Hey, Bill, let me ask you again, owner of Arkham Comics, Wilson and Rocky Mount, you've been doing these things for a while. You've had events now with Black Panther. Is there, because part of what we're talking about today on the show, obviously, is the cultural relevance and significance of this. Have you noticed that, you know, sort of a change in who shows up for your event versus other superheroes and anything in the vibe when you create these events?
Sure. Yeah. We actually live in a predominantly African-American, neighborhood is where our store's at. And when you have Victor like coming in as Black Panther or Blade, the kids get really excited. They're starting to see, like I said, when you see the trailers for Black Panther and you see, you know, all the action and stuff going on. Mm-hmm. Like, and then like tomorrow we advertise, hey, we're gonna have Black Panther at the premiere party at the theater. Everyone just is like, oh, I can't wait. This mm-hmm. is going to be fantastic, because they want to bring the kids to take pictures. And when we do that, like with Star Wars and stuff, we'll have the 501st out and try to be relevant to what, you know, what movie we're doing. And we always want to do something special. But this has, Black Panther's kind of gotten a different type of attention. It's really, really hyped up, and everybody's really excited about coming to see this character in person. So,
well, let me follow up on that. When you say really, really excited, I mean, I'm imagining if Captain America or what other, you know, other superheroes show up, people are excited about that. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why they stopped doing whatever they were doing. They stopped playing their video game to come to your comic book store.
Sure,
that's a big deal. So what? How is it different? What do you mean?
Well, I mean, as far as the Avengers go, like Iron Man, Captain America, things like that, they've been around for a long time. And right now you're seeing the first movie appearance of the first black superhero. And I think that that is in itself very revolutionary. And I feel like that's a good thing. That's a sign of the times, that we can be progressive and everyone can be excited about, you know, a black superhero. And like I said, Captain America, Spider-Man, they've had cartoons, TV shows for a long time, but now you're seeing something that's new to a lot of people. So,
well, I want to bring into the conversation now Howard Kraft, who's a professor at UNC Chapel Hill. He's a playwright. He's an author of his own black superhero. Howard Kraft created the Jade City Pharaoh for the stage and a spinoff radio series, and he's with us now. Welcome back, Howard.
Yeah, good to be here, Frank. A visiting professor. Visiting professor.
All right, he's a visiting professor. He's now visiting us. Well, because you're in the practice of, and then there's like a 3.5 paragraphs of what your professor
yeah, what
of the practice
the position of. Is called. Yeah.
Yeah, and that would end the show if I gave you your title. But talk a little bit about this, because we've certainly talked a lot about Jade City on this show, but it began as a play, and this was an African-American superhero who you created, right? And for you, and you've talked a lot about creating a backstory. Nobody can create an adventure like this without having a backstory, even if the viewers don't know it all. What was it like to out of thin air create a backstory for an African American superhero? There's no real template, or very few, right?
Yeah, not a lot of templates. The Black Panther is an African, you know, superhero, so his backstory, you know, is in Wakanda. But you had Luke Cage, Jonathan Stewart, Black Lightning, Falcon. So there were other ones out there. But none of these superheroes on Marvel or DC were created by African-American writers. So in some of those, particularly the earlier ones, some of the early Luke Cages, you know, the language is like, it's like
Sweet Christmas.
Yeah, what somebody would think.
That?
Yeah, what somebody would think that, you know, brother would say rather than the reaction, you know, so they would. And then some of them were borderline, you know, like the villain. I forget the one of his main villains was this Mammy character that with a rolling pin. And then, so, you know, some of the stuff was pretty bad. But when I created Harold Jones, one of the things I wanted to do in the backstory is try to imagine, you know, what if one of the superheroes was one of my partners, one of my homies, you know, and think about what that reality would be like in this present moment. You know, we have an issue with black men in powerful positions. I mean, you think about what happened with President Obama for wearing a tan suit, you know. So imagine what happens, you know, what would happen if the black superhero showed up in the cape. Would the cops be like, come help us? Or would it be like, hands up, you know?
Right.
Really trying to deal with those realities. And then I wanted to create a character that, unlike, you know, a Batman type, with that's very wealthy, you know, how does he make his day to day, and thinking about, you know, what would be his issues. And so, as you know, as you know, working with Jade City with me, you know, Harold Jones has issues like, you know, he's fighting crime, but he's also not answering his phone because Citibank is trying to chase him down for a student loan, you know, so real, you know, right. He drives because when it rains, you know, he crashed into the Popeye sign and, you know,
right.
his insurance was kind of janky, so he no longer flies when it rains. So, you know, bringing that humor, but like right. real life stuff.
But also, again, in an urban character, somebody from the streets. And again, that's what distinguishes even some of the other superheroes like Luke Cage from Black Panther. This is a superhero, Black Panther, with a backstory that is rooted in Africa. And the premise is, what if there was one African nation that wasn't colonized, right?
Yeah, you know, what would that be? You know, that's something, sadly, we'll never know. One of the things that I hope the film will do is get people interested in ancient civilizations of Africa, which, you know, they're definitely pulling on in a cinematic way for the film. But, you know, the Empire of Mali, the University of Timbuktu, the Songhai Dynasty, you know, so much rich history that we don't know. Unfortunately, the way Africa is portrayed when the president makes a comment like as whole countries, there's a lot of people who think that because all you see in the media about Africa is, you know, tragedy and chaos. And, you know, I often say, what if the only thing you ever saw about America was mass shootings, mudslides, hurricanes, you know, opiate overdose? That's the only thing you saw. Right. Then you're, you know. And so what this film is doing, I hope, one of the things that it does is just opens, you know, people up to say, hey, I wonder what, you know, these ancient civilizations were like. But what was Africa like before colonization?
It opens all of us up to those possibilities. But you wrote a piece in the Herald Sun over the weekend that talked about your introduction to African-American superheroes or the lack of them when you were a young man and the impact that had on you.
One of the things I was saying in an article, you know, I run around as Superman and The Flash was also one of my favorites. But I eventually, you know, kind of got out of the superhero thing or disconnected from it because at the end of the day, none of those heroes look like me. So then my heroes became Magic Johnson, Walter Payton. And then I, you know, discovered Luke Cage and got back into it. But one of the things that and I think about my son, who's 7, the only president he knew, you know, until 2016 was Barack Obama. Now he gets introduced to this African-American superhero. So his concept of what the possibilities for him, even in his imagination, are, you know, bigger than what mine were. And, you know, I think that's progress.
Victor Law, what do kids say when they do come up to you and see you, kids who may not have had too much exposure to any kind of superhero, and then there you are?
Some of them are scared, but I like to put them at ease and let them know that I'm a superhero and I'm a good guy. Their parents will kind of shove them toward me. Hey, take a picture with them. And I ask the parents, do you want to take a picture of me or a picture with me? Because it calms the children down who are not used to seeing adults in costumes to have the parent close by. So if we can take a selfie with the parent and the child, that kind of calms the situation down. The children that do know the character, oh, they just light up. They just light up. I just made their day. Oh, it's Black Panther, Black Panther. My granddaughter, who's 6, we went to see the Marvel Universe live show at Raleigh. She lit up. I got to see the show from her perspective because every time Black Panther did something on stage, she turned back and said, Grandpa, Grandpa, that's you, that's you, that's you. I was like, no, that's some younger guy who's got a lot more fitness than I do. No, that's you, that's you. I was like, okay, that's nice. Thank you. So,
But just think about that. Grandpa, that's you,
yes.
Which is impossible without this character for you in some ways. I mean, I suppose you could put on a Superman costume, but your granddaughter's, the likelihood that she would jump out of her seat, make the identification is pretty low for Superman. But here it's perfectly natural. She gets it.
Yeah. That's good.
Powerful stuff. Well, listen, we're going to continue this conversation on the state of things. But first, I want to thank our super fan, Victor Law, who's a cosplayer. He showed up today in full Black Panther costume. And you can see photos on our social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Victor, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Bill Young, owner of Arkham Comics, comic book store with locations in Rocky Mount and Wilson. Bill's going to be hosting the Black Panther premiere at AMC Classic Wilson, 10 o'clock tomorrow night. And you can find out details at our website, State of Things. Things.org. Bill Young, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Howard Kraft going to stick around as we dig in deeper to the Black Panther, his backstory, and his significance in this day and age. On the State of Things, please stay with us. This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow, and we're talking about Black Panther, a forthcoming movie that has become a bit of a movement. There's a Black Panther challenge that was started to send inner-city kids to see the Black Panther in theaters. Local communities encouraged to set up a GoFundMe page to sponsor movie trips. Activists have created a Change.org petition to encourage Disney to invest 25% of the film's profits in Black communities. Howard Kraft is still with us. He has written his own Black superhero, the Jade City Pharaoh, for the stage. Jade City Chronicles is also a radio adaptation. He is a visiting professor at UNC Chapel Hill, a poet and a playwright. And joining the conversation now is Adelifu Nama. He's a professor of African American Studies at Loyola Marymount University and the author of Super Black, American Pop Culture and Black Superheroes. Adelifu, welcome to The State of Things.
Thank you for having me here.
Good to have you here. This movie, talk about the timing of this movie. And it's interesting. It could have come out, I suppose, in the Obama administration, but it's coming out now. Talk about the timing of this.
Well, I think, you know, we can talk about the type of pre-popularity the superhero seems to have and the anticipation around the film. I would argue around, two points. The first point being that his portrayal in the Civil War film generated a type of buzz for the superhero for his own standalone film. And I think much of the buzz from the guest appearance in the Civil War Avengers film was around the really exciting and dynamic special effects and the introduction of a new hero with different powers that we hadn't seen. And so there was, for those who are, you know, invested in the kind of like the Marvel brand, here was a superhero that promised to show you things that you hadn't seen before and show them in a dynamic way. So that was one component. But the other component is a social cultural issue. And I would argue that in the wake of a Black Lives Matter movement, in the wake of Black professional NFL players kneeling in order to stand up to issues concerning community policing, in the wake of comments by the president concerning the status of African nations, that issues concerning race and racial representation become more vivid. Similar to the way the film Get Out resonated with American audiences, there's a way in which the Black Panther is situated to tap into the zeitgeist of the moment, that where racial awareness and racial tensions are very vivid and a part of our public discourse and public imagination.
Well, talk about that, because it's interesting to think about such a pop culture feature. This, the superhero, is a real feature of the popular culture landscape in America, right? So, and it is a thing that has bound together many fans for a long, long time. And on the other hand, what you describe is, in a fairly intellectual understanding of what other people are experiencing on the street every day. You know, to what extent do you think viewers or fans take this with them, and how does that work in the minds of fans and moviegoers when it comes to, you know, putting this all together and going out and buying a ticket for one movie?
Right, right. I think, you know, and rightfully so, you recognize the film is operating on multiple levels. Level of that we're talking about now in terms of intellectual cultural critique and evaluation, and then at the level of, you know, does it look like a good film to go see and spend money on and eat popcorn, right, and have a Coke? I mean, so there's multi levels to this, and to get to the latter point, I think in many ways I would argue that particularly the African American audience, the African American audience for the most part, I would argue, has not been following the Black Panther and its comic book iteration over the decades. I think that's a particular a niche audience. I think for the most part, the Black Panther as a film really, I would argue, is the first Black science fiction film. And if we talk about Star Wars, project coming to screens in 1977, It's been about 41 years, been several decades, that we haven't seen a black science fiction film in toto. And I think in this type of backdrop, in terms of the popular imagination, this has helped to generate the type of unprecedented buzz around this film, that it is not just kids saying, oh, man, they finally brought my favorite comic book character to the big screen. I would argue, no, it's about seeing black people and represented in a science fiction fantasy scape that is a dominant genre in our film in American society, and it's a dominant genre that has captured the imagination of much of the African-American youth and maybe even the community at large.
That would link Black Panther to the long tradition of Afrofuturism, wouldn't it?
Exactly. And that's how I couch this in terms of the imaginative, fantastic forms of black expression, from super science and technology to various forms of representation of blackness that aren't always bound to the notion of the urban menace or just a symbolic expression of coolness or just rooted in a racist past. And so there's a way in which the Black Panther, particularly its nation state of Wakanda and the super science that we see, is an imaginary fantasy scape that offers an opportunity for black folk and for all folk, really, to reimagine blackness. Right. And that is one of the kind of like core principles of Afrofuturism, astro-blackness, that it forces us to think about black people in ways that we aren't normally aware of or accustomed to.
And the important part of this is, if you're going to talk about the future, you do want to root it in a past that in many ways has been, if not lost, obscured. I want to play another clip from the trailer for Black Panther.
Tell me something. What do you know about Wakanda?
It's a third world country.
Textiles, shepherds,
cool outfits.
All the front. Explorers have searched for it. Called it El Dorado. They looked for it in South America. But it was in Africa the whole time. I'm the only one who's seen it. And made it out alive.
Clip from the trailer of Black Panther. I'm here with playwright and UNC visiting professor Hardcraft, and we're also talking today to the to Adelifu Nama, who's a professor at Loyola Marymount and author of Super Black: American Pop Culture and Black Superheroes. That history, and let's take us back, will you, Adelifu Nama, to the origins of this character created by Stan Lee in 1968, I think. And Wakanda and what it is and what it represents, because I think it's a powerful political statement for a comic book. Tell us more.
Right. I'm going to tweak some of those facts. We would be remiss if we didn't mention Jack King Kirby as the one of the principal creators of the Black Panther. And he's one of the artists and illustrators and imaginative creators of many of Marvel's most popular comics, comic book heroes. And the years, I believe, is 66 that the Black Panther emerges in the Fantastic Four showdown between that group and himself. And he tests them to see if his skill, his superhero skill set, it has matured to a level where he could take on his historical rival, Ulysses S. Claw. And that's the voice that we heard in that trailer. That's the character. And so, as we can see, when we say 1966, that's also the more or less the year of the emergence of Black Power. Black Power as a movement, Black Power as a sensibility, and the emphasis on blackness as a orientation. And so it's almost serendipitous, a zeitgeist, you could say, that the Black Panther actually precedes the Black Nationalist group, the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense, by several months. And and yet at the same time, there's a certain type of political, as you were saying about even in the origin story of the Black Panther character, there's a certain type of origin story around the politics of Black Power and the Black Panther Party in and of itself that seems to all coincide around this figure. So it's almost as if the character didn't have a choice but to be political. And so if we talk about that origin of Wakanda, and I think it was spoken about in the previous exchanges concerning Wakanda as an African nation that has not been colonized and the implications that it has not been savaged or ravaged by racism and its resources have been able to be intact and they've been able to develop along a line, arc of development that no other African nation has. And so it is inherently political, so much so that I don't even think you need to be didactic about what type of narrative you put forth in a film or comic. It's inherently has implications for a broader racial notion of how Africans and African Americans and their history has transpired over the last, 200 years, 300 years.
Well, when you're talking about mining their strategic mineral for your Captain America shield, wow, you don't get any more blunt than that. And yet, it's precisely what we expect from any kind of superhero story, right? There is a threat to our place, whether it's a planet or a nation, coming from the outside. They're going to take our stuff. This is exactly what we choose to identify with and how superhero works. And to me, it puts the average privileged white guy in a tough position when you realize it was imperialism that's at stake here. An interesting, it seems to me, paradox in this movie. Well, have I gone too far? Have I gone too far?
No, I don't think you've gone too far. I think that's what makes Black Panther a compelling character. In fact, I would argue that's not even all that necessarily unique to Black Panther. I think the whole ethos and pathos of the superhero is really a story about morality. It's really a story about how do we deal with issues of violence and self-defense? How do we deal with, when to engage in a more militant or a more, for lack of a term, the use of violence? Is there an ethical way in which this has to occur? And so in many ways, these are morality tales. Captain America is a morality tale. Wonder Woman is a morality tale. And they're trying to display a type of ethical grounding that runs throughout all of these narratives. And in fact, the superheroes really, when they win, they don't necessarily win because they're stronger. They often win because they are smarter and they have an ethical position that gives them the edge, that ultimately gives them the edge in the end.
Right is on their side. Howard Kraft, let me ask you how important, you talked about in the piece you wrote for the Herald Sun about not seeing black superheroes, so you pretty much left that genre and moved on. How important was Black Panther to you in creating your career as a writer and certainly as a creator of a superhero?
When I created Harold Jones and Jade City, I definitely wanted to go back and look at earlier mainstream comic book heroes, because one of the things I wanted to try to do with Harold Jones was to fill in some of the gaps that I felt as a youngster reading them in terms of a realistic or a black story that I could relate to that was familiar to me. So I looked at the Luke Cages, Black Lightning. When these books came out, a series of them came out, or characters were coming up everywhere in the late 60s, early 70s. Jonathan Stewart with the Green Lantern, Brother Voodoo, which in my opinion is probably one of the worst comics Marvel ever did. But and I looked at all those and then just tried to fill in the holes. As a kid growing up, I mainly read Luke Cage.
Yeah.
As much as I love the Panther, for me, the early books, the stories weren't that good. But I really liked the Hudlin Brothers run that they did, and Coates' run recently is really good. But yeah, to answer your question, I pretty much looked at every mainstream. And it wasn't a lot to look at, but the mainstream African American superheroes on DC and Marvel, and then tried to see what I could do different and where the holes were, and what didn't really work for me.
Adelifu Nama, I've only left you about 30 seconds, but is this a game changer? Do things change forever once this movie is out?
I believe it is a game changer. The question is, are we at the beginning of the game or the end? And so that's going to be what I want to keep my eye on. I want to see if there's going to be a Black Panther franchise. And are we going to get a Luke Cage to the big screen? Are we going to get Cloak and Dagger on the big screen? Are we going to get a repurposed Green Lantern with Jon Stewart? So these are all questions that will linger out there. And I think that this film is a good step in establishing a new paradigm for how we do black people in the future and in a science fiction milieu.
I want to thank both of you for being on our program. Adelifu Nama is a professor at Loyola Marymount University and the author of Super Black, American Pop Culture and Black Superheroes. Thank you so much for being on the program.
Thank you for having me.
Howard Kraft, a visiting professor at UNC Chapel Hill, a poet and a playwright and the author behind the Jade City Chronicles. Howard, good to have you back.
Always good to be here, my man.
You can find out all the details at our website, stateofthings.org, links to things that we have talked about, pictures of our superfan, all on our website, stateofthings.org. The State of Things is produced by Anita Rao, Laura Pelliser, Jennifer Brooklyn, Robert Kinlaw, Angie Perrin, and Amanda Magnus. Robin Copley is our technical director and sitting on the board today. She should be sitting behind it. She's sitting on it, so she's new. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.